Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Larame.
Hey, everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. My name is Mark Daly. I'm your host, and it's a race weekend. Looking forward to getting back to it, and I love starting a show off like this. We are just now 3 hours and 15 minutes away from FP1 at Spa-Francorchamps for the Belgian Grand Prix, one of my favorite circuits. Really looking forward to this one. And it's funny, you know, with the weird, obviously strange year that we've had, and the fact that we've basically been racing nonstop now since the beginning of July, the odd weekend that we've had since we started with the Austrian Grand Prix back on, what was it, July 5th or thereabouts? It seems like it's been a long time in between, but really happy to get back to it this weekend. And we got a jam-packed show today, and we finally have the rest of the season confirmed, 17 races. We're going to get into that shortly, but we're coming up on another triple header weekend with Spa next week in Monza, and then Mugello for the Tuscan Grand Prix in just over a couple of weeks from now on September 11th. And then we get a bit of time off in between before we go to Russia, Nürburgring, Portimao, and then back to Imola, the Turkish Grand Prix, then Bahrain for a double header. And then we're heading off to Abu Dhabi for the season finale on, I think it's December 16th or something like that. Quite a ways off, and a fantastic job considering that everything that has happened around the world with COVID over the past 6 months or so. The fact that we're still going to get a 17 race schedule that's only going to end about 2 weeks later than usual, because the season finale always typically goes about the last week in November, first weekend in December, depending on the year, but amazing that they've been able to cobble together a schedule. But anyways, let's start in the news right now. We have news that former team principal Flavio Briatore, who was the team principal at Benetton and then in the early 2000s in with Renault, and that's where Michael Schumacher won his first two world championships with Benetton 25 years ago. God, that makes me feel old to say that. And then he was team principal at Renault in 2005 and 2006 when Fernando Alonso won his double world titles. And then he left F1 in somewhat controversial circumstances in 2008 after Nelson Piquet Jr. deliberately crashed at the Singapore Grand Prix in 2008 to help Fernando win the race. Anyways, Briatore has been diagnosed with COVID-19 and has been transferred to the San Rafael Hospital in Milan on Monday of this week because of complications caused by COVID. There's been no official statement on his condition, but it's been speculated, reported in L'Espresso News that it says that he's in serious condition, but he is not in intensive care at the moment. So his sickness comes in the wake of a controversy in Italy around the closure of his billionaire club in Porto Cervo, which has been a real center for COVID. Around 60 members of or staff members from the club have tested positive recently. And then Briatore was in a friendly soccer game there with VIPs, including Bologna coach Sinisa Mihailovic, who also tested positive for COVID. Anyways, yeah, not great news to hear. I believe he's in his early 70s now, if I remember reading that correctly. And if you look at some of the pictures, he looks like an old 70. I mean, doesn't really look very much like the Briatore that I remember from about 15 years ago. But, you know, saying that, I mean, of course, 70 is getting up there a little bit, but I know people of similar age that don't look quite so, let's say, weathered as Flavio. But anyway, so hopefully he recovers soon and he's back to normal, obviously contracting COVID. And if you get symptomatic, if you're in a hospital, not a good situation. Anyways, Lewis Hamilton, the six-time world champion, says that this 2020 Formula One season so far has been what he calls a lonely journey in what he's tried to do to stay clear of any unnecessary risk or exposure to COVID-19. And I guess that was highlighted a little bit by the fact that Sergio Perez had to miss the two races at Silverstone a couple of races ago after testing positive for COVID after he went back to Mexico for a short visit. He had some things to take care of there. Anyways, Perez never developed symptoms. He insisted, despite reports and speculation to the contrary, that he did follow all the protocols and didn't try to expose himself unnecessarily. But anyways, Hamilton, he's always been a pretty busy guy. He's pretty intense, obviously, on race weekends. But, you know, he has a lot of outside interests with music, fashion. He loves to travel. I mean, you see lots of pictures he posts on Instagram. I mean, he goes to U.S. a lot, loves it in the USA. Anyways, he said because of the busy 2020 schedule that they've had with six races and seven weekends, which, you know, is great for us Formula One fans, but obviously pretty intense and pretty hectic for the drivers and all the team staff and everybody that, you know, participates in these events. And he said he's living in a bubble with, you know, very limited contact outside, you know, his people in his inner circle, which, you know, is like a lot of us are doing. But Lewis, he's obviously taking it to the next, you know, to the next level. But he's pretty much spent the last 2 months of the year living in the motorhome that he has at the race venues with his trainer, Angela Cullen. And he says it hasn't been very easy to change the usual routine that he has, you know, and still trying to keep his focus on winning the championship. And he said it's been a big challenge. He says that he knows that everybody's in the same boat, and you know, and he says it can be a very lonely journey. And he had to say, quote, "That's magnified this year, obviously, having to limit people who are in your bubble and of course moving around. What I used to do in the past was traveling, was the other things I was finding positive, but getting to be around friends, getting to be find that perfect balance is here. It's much, much harder to implement those other things to help keep that balance. I don't know, it's hard to put the words together, but everyone's doing it. I think it's a real challenge and a real test mentally for me personally. I don't know how it is for you guys, maybe seeing your families and stuff, but I'm not," end quote. So yeah, I can imagine it must be very, very difficult. And I mean, there's been some criticism from other for other drivers like Charles Leclerc and Valtteri Bottas. I mean, Charles was seen taking pictures. We went back to Monaco. I think it was in between the two races that they had in Austria. It might have even been between Austria and Hungary. But Charles posing for pictures and stuff like that. And you know, there has been some warnings handed out or given to some of the different teams for some of these things, you know, that they have to really abide and stick to the strict protocols, which, you know, in all fairness, I mean, I was a little bit skeptical that they'd be able to find something to pull off and make it work once they got back and confirmed that we were going to start racing back in July. But they've done a pretty good job so far. I mean, they said that in contrast to what we saw with the cancellation of the Australian Grand Prix back in March, when we had a team member from McLaren test positive back then, led to the cancellation of the whole event and everything like that. And the basically at the last minute, after it seemed like when we've heard some of the stories that's have come out subsequently, that it sounded like they'd all agreed to, and then they pulled the plug at the very last moment. But obviously, from a health standpoint, the experts, in science and medicine and people like that, who are obviously a lot smarter than me and a lot more knowledgeable when it comes to things like COVID-19 infectious disease, obviously understand it a lot better now. Maybe not completely, but obviously they understand a lot more than they did this spring. And I'm really glad that they've been able to do it. But interesting comments from Lewis nonetheless. It's interesting to see, get a small window inside, what some of these drivers are going through. Because I think obviously, we associate Formula One with the good life and, jet setting lifestyle. And, obviously these guys do, live a lot more extravagantly than most of us do. And certainly it must be difficult, though. I mean, to remain so focused and maybe not have those things that, regardless what sort of lifestyle you're living, you know, it's hard to stay on the edge and focus like that and not maybe have some of the distractions and some of the things, maybe not distractions, but some of the escapes to maybe just pull yourself away. And I think that being on the edge like that for the long run, I think it can affect you mentally no matter how good you are. And we know that Lewis is, you know, when it, mentally and focus-wise is the strongest that there is. But still, you need to step away from time to time and focus on something else, because being hyper-focused on any goal, I think, is can be difficult in the long run. I mean, you know, these guys are on the edge, and especially, I mean, he's chasing down Michael Schumacher's record of 7 world championships, and he's in a pretty good position right now. Anyways, Max Verstappen, the Red Bull driver, says that 9 races in 11 weeks is pushing Formula One absolutely to the limit, and he's really hoping that that next year in 2021 that we'll get back to a more regular schedule. And I completely agree. Like I was saying just now, it's awesome for us that we have a race to look forward to every weekend, and it does feel weird that that we've had this this week off in between the last two races. But having said that, it is a lot of work, and especially even though that they've been racing at the same venues or venues that are relatively close together, I mean it's a lot of work to do to keep it going. But Max says that that he knows that they need to race, but he says on the flip side of that, he says that these triple header weekends of 3 races and 3 weekends is pretty intense. And this even goes back a couple of years ago when we had the British, German, and French Grand Prix, the first year that that Paul Ricard was back on the circuit on the calendar. So I guess we're looking at 2018. That triple header weekend, which was the first that we've seen in recent times, was great for all of us. I mean, all the sports nerds out there, it was fantastic, because you had that, you had the World Cup, you had the Tour de France, you had baseball going on, all these cool things going on at the same time. But it's really pushing it to the limit. But it's also interesting too, because they keep saying, and Ross Brawn and some of the other brass at Formula One, they reckon that they could extend it beyond the 22 race season that we were supposed to have this year, and I think they reckon that they could even push it up to as much as 25 races a year, which seems pretty ambitious. Because to get that in, if we're still looking at the regular mid March to end of November schedule, you got to like cram another 3 races into that. You're either going to have to lengthen the season, start a couple of weeks earlier, or end another couple of weeks later, and have more of these double triple header weekends. Double headers we see quite often, but the triple headers, obviously, this year is a completely different circumstance from a regular year, but a lot of work to get these all done. Anyways, like I was saying off the top of the show, Turkey has been confirmed as the 17th race of the year, and they've also confirmed the schedule going up to the end of the year. So just a quick rundown. Obviously, we have a number of races under our belt. We have the doubleheader in Austria. We have the Hungaroring, the doubleheader with the British and 70th anniversary Grand Prix at Silverstone. We just got the Spanish Grand Prix under our belt the week before last at Barcelona. Coming up on Spa this weekend, Monza next weekend, Mugello for the Tuscan Grand Prix on the weekend of the 11th to 13th of September. Then we get a small break in between. Then we're going to the Sochi Autodrome for the Russian Grand Prix September 27th. Following that up with the Nürburgring, Portimao, then Imola, then Turkey on November 15th, then a doubleheader on the weekend of November 29th, and then December 6th in Bahrain, and then the traditional season finale at Abu Dhabi at the Yas Marina Circuit on the weekend of December 13th. So again, I think this is really awesome. Glad that they've been able to do that. And as much as I think that it was wise to have these doubleheader weekends, especially in the beginning of the year, I was really hoping that we might be able to sneak in one of these other postponed races at the end of the year. Vietnam was being mentioned and some other venues, but it just didn't work out. So, Bahrain, it works, and I'm not going to complain considering everything that's gone on, but I'm glad to see a real variation in there. I think it's really cool to see these tracks that we've never seen before or haven't been around for a while. Really looking forward to seeing the Nürburgring again. Really looking forward to going to Imola and Istanbul again. And certainly some of these new ones like Mugello and Portimao. It's going to be really cool. So big props to Formula One. And Chase Carey, the F1 CEO, had to say earlier this week, quote, "We are proud to announce that Turkey, Bahrain, and Abu Dhabi will be part of our 2020 season. This year has presented Formula One and the world with an unprecedented challenge, and we want to pay tribute to everyone across Formula One, the FIA, the teams, and our partners who have made it possible. While we are all disappointed that we've not been able to return to some of our planned races this year, we are confident our season has started well and will continue to deliver plenty of excitement with traditional as well as new races that will entertain all of our fans," end quote. So there you go. Certainly, I think they've done a wonderful job to get this all sorted out, and really looking forward to it. Anyways, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
While sports can bring us so much joy, it can also bring us a lot of unwanted stress. And that stress can make it difficult to concentrate, relax, and get decent sleep. Sunday Scaries was launched in 2017 by two best friends and business partners, Bo Schmidt and Mike Sill. They operated a full-service bar with 50 employees and were always exhausted. They tried all kinds of products, but they didn't work. Then they started experimenting with CBD. They loved the effects and regained control of their days and nights, but they wanted better CBD products. So what they did for themselves was specially formulate CBD gummies with vitamins D3 and B12 that were super consumable, easy to take on the go, and effective. Long story short, their specially formulated CBD products and vitamins helped relieve the overwhelming angst they felt on a daily basis. So in July 2017, they named the company Sunday Scaries and began sharing their products with friends and launched their online store at SundayScaries.com. With tens of thousands of customers, monthly subscribers, and a 100% money-back guarantee, Sunday Scaries has always been on a mission to transform a worrisome nation into a chill one. And right now, we have a bonus for you. Get 25% off all products at SundayScaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME. Again, 25% off all products at SundayScaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME.
Hey guys, Greg Peterson here with the Baseball Betting Podcast. As we know, the MLB season is back in our lives. It's going to be a 60-game sprint unlike anything that we've ever seen before. And I'm going to be giving you picks every single day, 7 days a week, with Major League Baseball. We're also going to be keeping up with the KBO as well. If you like baseball and you like being able to make some money, subscribe to the Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. And sticking on the theme of new races and canceled races and postponed races, Zandvoort, which was going to host the Dutch Grand Prix this year for the first time in 35 years, do the math, mid-1980s, obviously to only get scratched off of the calendar because of the pandemic situation. They said that they're open to having a slot later next year in 2021 so they can get fans in attendance for the race. I mean, obviously part of the big push to get Zandvoort back on the schedule is because obviously the Dutch have a rock star Max Verstappen at the top of Formula One, and you could be guaranteed he would have about 50 to 100 extra horsepower, figuratively speaking, with the home support, with all the Dutch fans, and the real shame that got canceled. Anyways, they had an event at Zandvoort earlier this week, and they were officially presented with their Grade 1 license, and their Grand Prix sporting director, ex-Formula 1 driver Jan Lammers, he called it a milestone. Anyways, Lammers had to say, quote, "The last Grand Prix was held in 1985, and we are now a certified track again. We can be very proud of our facilities. This is a beautiful track with legendary character, which is still the same. And we added some nice and surprising effect with the bank corners. We couldn't wish for anything better." Lammers went on to say that he's really hopeful that Zandvoort will be able to host the Dutch Grand Prix open to fans next May in 2021. Obviously, that depends a lot on the pandemic situation, how things are going with COVID around the world and at that time. And he said that he's also open to the idea of postponing the race or rescheduling it to later in 2021 if it means that you know, they could get fans into the stands there. And you just know what we've seen at places like Spa in Austria, some of these circuits that are closer to Holland that are you know, easier and reasonable to get to. I mean, a lot of people can drive to these countries from Holland. We used to do it all the time. When I lived in Holland, we drove down to go to the Nürburgring. We drive down to France to go skiing, to Austria, places like that. So it's entirely doable. You can do it within a day comfortably. And certainly, you know, to have that that home support, all the Dutch fans in the stands cheering on Max Verstappen, that sea of orange would really give a really cool atmosphere. It'd be very much like Monza, but not red, orange. Anyways, yeah, I think it's a great idea if they can, you know, postpone it. I think obviously next year is going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to schedule next year, what they're going to do, how they're going to schedule it, and fit all these races in. And I think that it's going to be a work in progress as well. But you know, they've got time to plan it now. They've got all these health and safety protocols in place. And if they can, you know, piece together a schedule and a season like they have this year and all years, then if the situation is better in 2021 and things have improved, then certainly I think they'll be able to pull it together. But sounds like flexibility might be the name of the game. Anyways, speaking about health and safety protocols in Formula One, they've tweaked the rules and amended them slightly, which allows all of the teams to have 10 extra personnel in the paddock starting this weekend at the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps. And this actually has to do with the return of the team's own hospitality buildings that they have, the spa, which they had to use because you know, the temporary facilities that have been provided by the circuits, and then the central catering providers that they had for the first six events. So, you know, good to see that you know, that these things that have been you know, amended, and you know, before they had this you know, 60 people associated with the operation of the car and these curfew restrictions, and then they had another 20 slots that were for drivers, team management, physios, marketing, media, anything like that. But now, you know, they're allowed to bump up that that total number from 80 people in the paddock to 90, and this number was formally approved by the World Motorsport Council this week and added into the sporting regulations for this year. So good to know. I mean, again, these health and safety protocols with COVID, you know, obviously are a work in progress, and you know, just like the situation at large, it's also fluid and changing. But glad to see that they can increase that, because I mean, it literally takes a small army of people to run a team in the Formula One paddock on a race weekend. Anyways, you know, let's switch gears now, metaphorically speaking. Anyways, and let's go back and talk a little bit more about what was the big news last week, and that was the rather quiet and uneventful announcement that all 10 teams had signed on to the new Concorde Agreement, which will be in place from 2021 to 2025. And Christian Horner, the team principal at Red Bull Racing, said that the you know, the talks that they had with Formula One about the new Concorde Agreement were what he said was, quote, remarkably straightforward. And this allowed Red Bull to be the first team to agree to the terms of the new agreement. And I still find this absolutely astonishing. But, you know, like I've said many times, you know, I'm of that generation that that any time that, you know, there was any discussion about things like that, it seemed that all the grievances were aired in public, and it sounded like it was always going to blow up and something was going to happen, and we were going to have some sort of Mickey Mouse competition series running in parallel that might be watered down, or Formula One might become watered down. You know, ultimately it never happened, but that talk was around there for a long time. I guess it was a bluff more than anything, or maybe not. But, you know, this still really surprises me. I mean, this new management of Formula One under Chase Carey and Liberty Media is very, very different to Bernie Ecclestone in the 40 years that he ran Formula One. But I think it really is, very much like Christian Horner says, remarkable that that this went off with, relatively straightforward and without too many hitches. Anyways, Horner had to say, quote, negotiations were lengthy, especially given the global challenges facing the sport. But in some respects, they were also remarkably straightforward in comparison with previous years. Negotiating with Bernie Ecclestone in the past was always good fun, but always a bit different. But Liberty were scrupulously fair with the negotiations. And we were, in fact, the first team to sign it in Barcelona. You have to take a holistic view on these things. That is what the agreement was. That is what Chase Carey and Liberty Media were putting on the table. It was up to the teams to if they chose to take it or leave it. There was, of course, back and forth on certain points, and there are elements that pleased some teams more than others. But in the end, everyone came to agree on the best way forward for the good of the sport. End quote. You know, like I say, that is absolutely amazing. But now Toto Wolff, team principal at Mercedes, has weighed in, and he believes that this new Concorde agreement is what he calls the biggest transition in the history of Formula One once these new terms and everything that come into effect. Now, the real core of this new Concorde agreement is the more equal distribution of prize money, which is a real part of what Formula One is trying to do to make this sport more sustainable for the teams who are involved and also more competitive and really even the playing field. So these revised commercial terms are going to work alongside this the new budget cap that is coming in 2021 is going to slowly scale down over the next several years. And then the new tech regs that were a delayed introduction, where they were going to come in next year as well, but what with COVID and everything, it was going to be tight regardless of the pandemic situation. And wisely, they've pushed it off a year, so they're going to be introduced finally in 2022. So, anyways, Wolff was talking in advance of the Belgian Grand Prix this weekend, and he said that he didn't actually think it was a big surprise to see all of the team sign up, and he was also pleased to see that the talks were actually successful and were brought to a conclusion. Anyways, Wolff had to say about Mercedes in particular, quote, "We've always said we want to stay in F1, so the agreement wasn't necessarily all that surprising. But we're happy that we could bring the negotiations to a positive conclusion. We are committed to our sport and we're looking forward to the upcoming years, which we will see the biggest transition F1 has ever seen. They will reward agile, open-minded teams who can adapt successfully to all the demands of the new rules," end quote. And that, I think, is absolutely key. I think that with less money to work with and with all the changes coming in, I think teams are going to have to think outside the box more than ever before. You just can't necessarily throw a ton of money at a problem if you have all the resources and try and design and fix your way out of it. They're all going to be playing with the same amount of money. Obviously, the bigger teams might have the better facilities, but you've got teams like Racing Point, aka Aston Martin, that have a new facility that is in construction right now. I believe that the date for the official opening has been pushed back by a significant amount of time. But anyways, it's in the works, and it's going to be a big improvement on what Racing Point and Force India before had. And you know, that's always a team that's like I've said for many years on the show, have always punched above their weight and done more with less. But anyways, it will be interesting to see how the teams use the resources and the money that they have at their disposal, and how they're going to do what they need to do to be competitive, to design and build cars and race in Formula One. And I really, really hope that they've nailed it this time, that the combination of this cost cap, the new rules, and this distribution, more equal distribution of the prize money, is that magic formula that they've really been looking for especially over the past several years, that where they fiddled around with it, especially in the last year or so, where they've kind of tweaked the regs here and there with downforce and stuff like that. I mean, these cars that they have right now, I think they're improvement on the previous generation, but they still just haven't been able to find that magic solution, where the cars are able to get closer together. You don't have that big disturbance that's kicked out by the aerodynamics, and still restricts them, the, you know, from really getting up on the gearbox of the car in front of them and finding that that real sweet spot where they can challenge more and have more overtaking. We've had very exciting races, but at times you know the cars still don't allow for it. So I'm really hoping that they've discovered it this time, and it's really going to work out. So you know, like I say, it'll really be put to the test over the next couple of years, and we really won't know until 2022, especially because the cars that we're going to see next year are just a development of the cars that we have this year, which are just a development of the cars that we had last year. So 2022, I think, is a reasonable time to see how it's working, but it will be interesting to see next year the reduction in the amount of money that they can use and this token system that that they're bringing back in, how teams are going to use that. So we'll see. Next year will be kind of an in-between year, an interim kind of period, but it'll be kind of fun to watch over the next couple of years to see how these ideas really bear fruit and how it works in reality. Anyways, Haas said this whole drive to level the playing field in Formula One, to find that that equality and really strike that level ground, is the big key for them to stay in Formula One. And they're committed by signing on to 2025, which is great. Like I've said for quite some time on the show, I think it's important to have an American team in Formula One. They've been disappointing, but not everybody nails it when they first come into Formula One. Not even Mercedes. I mean, they had their moments, but it wasn't until 2014 when they really got it together, and they haven't looked back since. I mean, could Haas be the next Mercedes? Probably not. Well, maybe not under the F1 world that they've been in over the past several years, but who knows under the new formula. And really hoping to see more action and more equality between the teams. And it would be fun to see more teams challenging for podiums and race wins and ultimately for championships, both for the drivers and the constructors. Gene Haas, who is the team owner of Haas F1, told motorsport.com this week. He said, quote, "I'm just kind of waiting to see how the season starts off. If we have another bad year, then it would not be that favorable to stay." Something, when he said that a little bit earlier this weekend, earlier this year. Gunther Steiner, that is, the team principal, he had to say, quote, "I guess Gene Haas looked at it, and Formula One's still a very good tool for getting his brand name, Haas Automation, out in the world. It works, otherwise he wouldn't be doing it. He loves the sport as well. Even if it is a big financial commitment with the new regulations coming in, it should make the playing field more even and the commercial aspects better for the smaller teams. So as a result, he has decided to continue. For me, it means, even at the moment when we're not running competitively, we've got a Formula One team which works, and that's more down to the team than to me. I'm part of the team, though. We all work together, and in the end, Gene believes in the team. Everybody is for sure happy to be moving forward now with this agreement signed," end quote. Anyways, Steiner did go on to say that he believes that the budget cap should help equalize and level the playing field, and he really says that it might not be the first year, but he feels in the midterm that that is going to help, and the payments that are the part of this new agreement is going to help it as well, and mean that the smaller teams are going to get more revenue, they're going to get a bigger piece of the pie, and it is what it is. He did go on also to say that it's never enough for the small teams, but it should be better than it is now, and really hoping that that'll work out. But like I say, I'm glad to see that they're sticking around in Formula One for the medium term anyways, at least until 2025. Anyways, time here for another break on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. I'll be back in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Greg Peterson, host of the podcast Hoopin' with Hoops. Despite the fact that college basketball is in the offseason, it's never too early to get a jump start on taking a look at these teams, because there is now 357 of them for the upcoming 2020-2021 college basketball season. I'm going to give you guys a deep dive on every last one of them, keep up with all the transfers in college basketball, and so much more. You are able to subscribe to Hoopin' with Hoops on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. And, well, there was some news this week, and I'm kind of surprised that this didn't drag out as long as maybe I thought it might be, considering the global economic situation. But Williams, they have new owners, and this is, you know, the team has only been up for sale or looking for investors just for a very short period of time, just going into a couple of months. And it's interesting. It's a U.S. investment firm called Derilton Capital, and there have been very few details that have come out since this, you know, this whole deal went through earlier this week. And the one thing that has been confirmed is that the team's name is not going to, you know, it's not going to change it at all. Anyways, it was also confirmed that George Russell is going to be staying with the team until 2021. And Russell had to say earlier this week, quote, "I spoke with Matthew Savage this morning, who's the chairman of the company. At the moment, they're in a full review of what changes need to be made, who will be forming the management side of the company. It's very positive news for Williams as a whole and everybody who works for the team and for both of us as drivers. Obviously, a slightly nervy time previously, and I'm very pleased to see that the team is stable moving forward and that it's got a great company behind to help Williams put Williams back to where they belong, which is definitely higher up the grid," end quote. Yeah, so that's good to see. He was also asked in the interview if he wanted to see the Williams family, so Claire and Sir Frank still involved in the team, and he said that he realized that the Williams family has been a big, huge part of Formula One over the past 30, 40 years, if not longer. But he said the most important thing with the change of ownership is that the name and that side of things will be continuing, which he felt was important. And he also said that he felt the Williams family would have not have sold the team to somebody who they didn't believe would be well, ultimately beneficial for the team and where they're going to go in the future. So he also said that the culture of the team will not be changing from the historic side, but, you know, I guess keeping the team name is one thing, but they've got to do something. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to be happening, you know, when it comes to the management side, whether, you know, Claire Williams will stay as a team principal. I mean, basically Sir Frank, I mean, he's, you know, he's getting old now. I mean, he's basically stepped away from, you know, the track side, you know, a couple of years ago. And you know, let Claire run the team, but they've really, really struggled. I mean, it didn't just happen overnight. It's obviously the culmination of you know, things happening over a period of time. But I certainly hope that this is you know, a move in the right direction for them. Now, McLaren, who you know, are involved in a good many things outside of Formula One, they've decided to pull out of their cycling team after 2020, and that is Team Bahrain McLaren, and so they're done at the end of this year. I mean, this team is going to be in the Tour de France, which gets going this weekend. You know, they had long-term goals to stay in the sport. You know, they had some high-profile signings in the team, including Mark Cavendish, for cycling fans who know that. Anyways, the financial difficulties that have hit McLaren because of the coronavirus pandemic have really kind of pushed them into making this you know, this move. And I guess it's not really too surprising. It's unfortunate. Anyways, there was a statement that was issued by the cycling team that said, quote, "Bahrain World Tour Cycling Team and McLaren, the British supercar maker and F1 team, today confirmed that McLaren will conclude its title partnership of Team Bahrain McLaren at the end of the 2020 season. Team Bahrain McLaren has worked together with the team's partners to maintain the team at the top level of pro cycling, both on and off the bike. The distinctive Team Bahrain McLaren colors have ridden to a number of memorable victories so far in this COVID-19 interrupted season, including the Saudi Tour, Paris-Nice, the Circuito de Gexto, the Route d'Occitanie. The team thanks McLaren for its contribution to the partnership and wishes it well as it returns to its focused to four-wheeled racing," end quote. So, yeah, unfortunate, but McLaren, I think, you know, at some point you got to realize you got to focus on your core activities. And I think for them, obviously, that is Formula One and their car company. And as positive and as good a thing it might have been, obviously, that, you know, that gets away from what they do. And certainly it would be a shame if, you know, they had problems, because they've really made good progress in Formula One over the past couple of years. And it would really be, you know, a shame to see them, you know, slide back out or down from the progress that they've made because of financial problems. Anyways, let's move now and talk about the driver's silly season. There's a lot going on here, a lot of names being thrown out here, and obviously Sebastian Vettel and is one of them. Before we talk about Seb, the guy that he's been speculated to replace is Sergio Perez at Racing Point to become Aston Martin next year. A couple of weeks ago, Checo was saying that if Seb is going to join the team for 2020, it would be obvious who he's going to replace. And obviously, I think that makes a lot of sense because the team is owned by Lawrence Stroll and his consortium. Lance Stroll, who is the son of Lawrence, is in the team, and Lance has had a fairly decent season so far. But, the thing is, if you get a driver like Sergio Perez and Sebastian Vettel, Seb, I think he would bring some credibility and some legitimacy and some, he's a different level driver, obviously, compared to Sergio Perez. And that's no disrespect. I mean, Sergio is a very capable driver in Formula One. I think he's done well in the situations that that he's been in. But obviously, Stroll and his group have put a lot of money into that team. I mean, he's brought Aston Martin into the mix. I mean, they've been a sponsor of Red Bull for the past couple of years, but now they're coming in as a manufacturer in their own right, and they're doing this seriously. I mean, they're putting a lot of money into it, and I think getting a guy like Sebastian Vettel in that team would really do wonders for him. I mean, he's obviously a four-time world champion, has won lots of races. I mean, he's obviously had his struggles as well, but that's still up in the air. I mean, it's been acknowledged by Seb that he's had some loose discussions with them. Perez, has acknowledged that as well, of course. But Perez has also said he's not talking to any other teams in Formula One about a drive for next year. And he's actually confident that he's going to stay with the team for 2021. Before when they got to Belgium this week, Perez had to say, quote, "I think as I said before, a matter of time. I feel really happy in the team. I believe in the project. I've been here for a while and I can see that how the team is going upwards. We all feel internally that everything is working well. We don't see the reason why we should change anything. I don't see any reason to change. I don't think we're enjoying a great season on track. I think we are enjoying a great season on track and I think things are working really well in the team. I don't expect any change." Of course, we've heard other drivers say very similar things in situations before, and then only to have other things happen. Whether or not this whole Sebastian Vettel speculation, comes to anything, that remains to be seen. I mean, there are a couple of potential places that seats that look like they're opening up in Formula One for Seb, but I mean, to go from Ferrari down to an Alfa Romeo or a Haas, obviously that would be a real drop down for Sebastian Vettel. And I mean, he hasn't really ruled out anything. He hasn't ruled out taking out a year, maybe moving moving to another team, or maybe outright retiring. I mean, only Sebastian will know that ultimately what it is. But when it comes to Sebastian Vettel, he said he has no plans to hire a manager, and this is in light of the fact, and or despite of the fact, that there is a lot of uncertainty in his future in Formula One. So there have been he was linked a couple of times. I mean, it was speculated maybe he might be going there might be something going on at Mercedes. I mean, Toto Wolff said a couple of months ago that would be something they would consider. I mean, Valtteri Bottas said that wasn't going to happen, and hinted that he was going to get a deal, which ultimately that was confirmed. There was some speculation maybe with Red Bull that was tossed out there, even though Christian Horner said that maybe Sebastian might be a little bit too expensive. And obviously, he's also got a bit of a history with Max Verstappen, not in a good way. Anyways, Seb had an interview with former Grand Prix driver Ralf Schumacher, and also a fellow German. Anyways, Seb had to say, quote, "Maybe it helps here and there, but I think that this is the path I've always taken. Some people come and go. There are a lot of people who pat you on the back, and a few weeks later, the same people are criticizing you. I've always been, I don't want to say alone, as of course, you have people around you who support you, but I think more important than perhaps creating the public opinion is that you know which people you can trust and whom you can build upon. I think I actually have a good and strong environment there. I'm still in good spirits and quite clear in my head." Just talking about Ferrari. I've never been so dependent on what the, might be an external perception, what people think, what people say. Thank God I've never been so dependent on that. I don't follow everything that's been written or said. Anyway, it's very interesting. It still seems like he's very undecided and not decided on what he's going to do. He did also elaborate that he's not frustrated or demoralized at all, despite, having the worst start in his to a season since 2008. And he said that, he did meet, also admit that he's been in a happier place, and it can't be, can't be easy with the struggles that they've had. And Seb had to say, quote, "I don't think it is fair to label seasons or races. I know a lot of people that tend to say this was my best race or best performance or worst performance ever. I think it is quite difficult to make that statement because there have been so many races. Whatever the situation is, I'm sure I trust the people around me and the guys working on the car. I struggle because of a lack of confidence, and that confidence is a lack of grip. So it's not just that you feel uncomfortable driving the car when it is coming from somewhere. We are still trying to understand where it exactly comes from, but at the same time, we have to make progress, move on, and tackle it again." Yeah, I mean, he really has struggled with the car this year, and it has to be frustrating. But despite all the uncertainty and the fact that he is kind of in limbo, obviously he's out at the end of the year in at Ferrari. It's got to be disappointing. Obviously, I looked at one point that he might be the best shot to win a world championship, not only for himself but for Ferrari for the first time in over a decade. I mean, it's been a long time since they won either a drivers or constructors championship, but that window is now closed, and it just is not going very good for him. Anyways, Kimi Raikkonen, the Iceman, 40 years old. He's in his second year of a two-year deal with Alfa Romeo, and he's admitted that neither him, well, we all knew that he was only on a two-year deal, but he's also revealed that his teammate Antonio Giovinazzi has neither been confirmed for 2021. And Kimi has also said that he hasn't decided whether or not he's going to stick around in 2021 and race again. It was kind of hinted at or speculated at the time when he moved to Alfa for last season after he had raced at Ferrari for a couple of years alongside with Sebastian Vettel, that 2020 would be his last year. And he said that he's undecided right now. He has to, first of all, decide what he wants to do and figure out what's going on. And he said that, family considerations are going to come into, come into that, his family, his kids. And he said because of the situation, with COVID and everything, he hasn't been able to be at home as often he's like or as he would like. And that's been difficult. But I think, obviously just reading between the lines that, his family situation is going to be, a big thing. And then he was also asked if he might move, waiver or leave Alfa Romeo to leave another, room for, say, a younger driver to come in. He said, he was compared to whether or not, he would do for what, Mika Hakkinen did when he left McLaren at the end of 2001. So Kimi could join. And he said that he felt that Hakkinen didn't leave for him, and said that the reason he left McLaren at the time was for other things rather than what happened at his career. He said he had a three-year contract with Sauber at the time, but obviously going from Sauber in 2001 to McLaren when they were really at at their peak and a really good place at that time was quite the move. But also, the news that Giovinazzi is not confirmed for 2021. He said he had no news on or anything to reveal about what his future might be, but he also feels it might be a little bit too early in the season because we only have half a dozen races under our belt, and he feels that as long as he's competitive, consistent, and doing everything he can in the car that he has, that things might work out. All right, well, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. Be back in just a moment. All right. Well, sticking with the driver lineups, Haas has said that all options are still open for 2021 regarding their driver lineup of Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen. And team principal Gunther Steiner admitted he said that they're looking at everything, and they're looking at the drivers, and they haven't made any decision, what they're going to do. He did go on to say that he's not trying to be evasive or avoid answering that question, and since that they've just gotten all the talks and discussions and the whole process for the Concorde Agreement out of the way, that he hasn't actually spoken with Gene Haas, the team owner, about what they're going to do with the drivers. He wants Haas's input on what they're going to do with the drivers for 2021, and that is a decision that they're going to make, and it's a discussion he's going to have with Gene Haas very, very soon. You know, honestly, I think that for me, I could have seen Kevin Magnussen coming back this year, but Grosjean, when he was confirmed for 2020, I kind of that was a bit of a eyebrow raiser for me, especially when you had a guy like Nico Hülkenberg who was available after the end of last year, after he lost his seat at Renault to make way for Esteban Ocon. And he actually obviously didn't get a seat in Formula One this year. Yeah, and Hülkenberg, just to mention him, he obviously did very well in those two races where he filled in for Sergio Perez for the two races at Silverstone earlier this month. He did say that he'd been talking with different teams, but because of that, but he said that he has no interest in taking on a role as either a test driver, reserve driver in Formula One. And you can see why. I mean, he's done pretty decent when he's been in Formula One. And why would you do that just to, get a reserve driver role? I mean, those roles are great for guys like Marcus Ericsson, maybe like a Pascal Wehrlein, guys like that. But I think Nico Hülkenberg is too good for a job like that. So, I mean, if he can maybe get, a race seat again, and it looks like there are some of these, possibilities. Like I said, Aston Martin is one, although that seems to be, down to two guys, Perez and Vettel, from what you take from all of that. So it'd be either Haas or maybe Alfa Romeo. So we'll keep our eye open and see whether or not, we see Nico Hülkenberg back in Formula One for 2021. Anyways, let's talk now about Max Verstappen. Jenson Button, a former Formula One driver and world champion, he says that Max Verstappen is annihilating teammates in a manner that that we have not seen since the times of guys like Ayrton Senna and Michael Schumacher. So he hasn't actually been beaten by his teammate in the standings since he was paired up with Danny Ricciardo back in 2017. And then even that year, he outqualified Danny Ric 13-7 in that year. So, the last year, Max outqualified his teammates 15-5, and that was the combo of Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon. And so far this year, Max Verstappen is qualified as a teammate Alex Albon all six times and finished ahead of him in the race in every single race that they've kind of competed so far. Anyways, Button had to say, quote, "You compare him to his teammates the last 2 years, he has just annihilated them. I haven't seen that in motorsport for a very long time, probably back to the Ayrton Senna days and Michael Schumacher days. I don't think that there's been a driver that's annihilated their teammate like he has in a very long time. He's doing an exceptional job. I would love to see him go up against Lewis Hamilton in championship fight. Those two, top of their game, it's all what we want to see. Is it ever going to happen? I don't know." End quote. Absolutely. I'd love to see Lewis and Max fighting it out for the world championship. But, the gap between the Red Bull and the Mercedes at the moment is just a little bit too much. I mean, Max did a great job to win that race at Silverstone the other week. And certainly did, an excellent job managing his tire. I mean, the team strategy was, worked out as well. Even though that Max kind of pushed it a little bit, but he's done well where he's needed to. I mean, he's ahead of Valtteri Bottas in the championship, who certainly hasn't done any favors to himself with some of the bad starts that he's had in Spain and in Hungary. And I mean, he's lost touch now with Lewis Hamilton. But whether or not Max can close that gap to Lewis remains to be seen. Doesn't seem likely, but hey, you never know. Pardon me. Anyways, the Helmut Marko, the Red Bull's motorsport advisor, says that Alex Albon is actually doing a better job than many people would think, and doing better than the results that he's had so far this year actually actually suggest. And he actually has said that he's actually as fast and as quick as Max Verstappen through the fast corners. Marko was talking about at Silverstone, Albon was the quickest guy on the track at some point of both of those races across both weekends, and he says that this shows potential that if he can actually get this one lap form and bring it away from a Saturday and apply it to a Sunday. And he's had some issues with the car as well, but it's a bit of a difficult one, I guess. Maybe when you're in the know in the team and you can see some of this data, but certainly when you see how disproportionate the results are in qualifying in the race, it isn't translating yet, but obviously they think he has a potential. I mean, Gasly's actually doing pretty good in the AlphaTauri, and of course he was the guy that he replaced last year. But Red Bull is an interesting one because they have AlphaTauri, or previously Toro Rosso, is kind of that development junior team, and I kind of wonder how long the likes of Danny Kvyat and Pierre Gasly will stick with that team. They're obviously good enough to be in Formula One, but they got other younger drivers in the system, and the whole goal is try and feed these guys up through the team to get to the big team, to Red Bull Racing. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes and who sticks and who comes up through the system. But ultimately, it comes down to results. And even though he might be matching Max for speed on certain corners, on certain tracks, I mean, you got to do it over the course of an entire lap, and not just one lap, but over the entire race and qualifying. So, a lot of work for him to do, but it looks like he's got potential. But again, the big question is, how long are they going to wait for that potential to develop? Anyways, moving back to brake duct gate. That's a bit of a mouthful. Anyways, Renault has requested a withdrawal of their Racing Point appeal, and they want to do that. It's just this long, drawn out saga. Anyways, Renault released a statement this week that said, quote, "Beyond the decisions, the matter at issue were vital to the integrity of Formula One, both during the current season and the future. However, intensive and constructive work between the FIA, Renault DP World F1 team, and all the Formula One stakeholders has led to concrete progress in safeguarding the originality in the sport by way of amendments to the sporting and technical regulations planned for the 2021 racing season, confirming the requirements to qualify as a constructor. Reaching the strategic objective in the context of the new Concorde Agreement was our priority. The controversy of the start of the season should now be put behind us, as we need to focus on the remainder of an intense and unique championship," end quote. So I guess hopefully that means this is finally behind us. It kind of was getting a little bit ridiculous, it seemed. It almost seemed inevitable. I mean, Racing Point really turned a lot of heads when we got to Barcelona with the pink Mercedes. And it seemed like even then that it was always likely a protest was going to come at some point, and ultimately it did, and it started to get a little bit repetitive. But I'm glad that they, found a resolution to it, and I hope that means that there will not be any more protest, and that this matter's put behind us. Anyways, restriction, clampdown, whatever you want to call it, on car copying in F1 is going to have zero impact on their business model at Racing Point. That's according to Otmar Szafnauer, the team principal. Anyways, I mean, this has really been a real, big controversy on both sides, both for, Racing Point, who maintained that they've done this all themselves, and they basically reverse engineered Mercedes' concept, and they weren't as successful with the car initially. They went back before they made forward progress. And they maintain they did nothing wrong. Anyways, Szafnauer had to say, quote, "I don't think it changes our business model at all. We're not the most effective team. We've got 500 employees. The reason we don't have 700 or 800 like some of the bigger teams is we lack in-house manufacturing. But if you just compare us to everyone else in design, development, aero personnel, we are the same. We are the same as the big teams. It has zero impact. We've always been a constructor from the days of Jordan to the days of Racing Point, and everywhere in between. We've got the capability of designing, developing, and constructing collecting all of our own components. It will have zero impact on our business model. If the rules become more clear, we will stay within the bound of those rules. Absolutely no problem. End quote. So there you go. Anyways, let's take a look now at just a couple of things that might come in for the or we might see at the Belgian Grand Prix this weekend. So nothing new, but the FIA are going to be policing the track limits and be strict of that. We've seen that quite a bit over the races this year. Race director Michael Massey was pretty strict and said that there will be only three exceptions for each driver before they're reported to the stewards, rather than three for each of the corners, and that's turn 4 and turn 9 and turn 19 at Spa. They'll be shown the black and white flag, and then any corner cutting after that will be reported to the stewards, and then you could get the 5-second time penalty or whatever. So this is something we've seen several times so far this year, and it's, like I say, it's not really a big surprise that they're going to do this again this weekend. So also, numerous teams have brought new lower downforce wings to a Belgian Grand Prix. They're going to try and boost their straight line performance and top speed. Haas is one of these teams that are going to be trying out this this new wing, as are McLaren. And so this engine mode clampdown is going to be coming to effect, and the technical directive was finally issued last week to confirm the new engine mode restrictions, which have actually been pushed back a week. They were going to come in this weekend for Belgium. They've been now delayed a week until Monza next weekend. So they make reference to the fine print, which is Appendix 4 of the Formula One sporting regulations, and this covers the power unit period that runs up until 2025. And the rules also specify that manufacturers can request FIA approval for upgrades for what they call, quote, reliability, safety, cost-saving, car installation, and supply issues. End quote. So there you go. It'll be interesting to see, what it does. I mean, this engine mode clampdown, there's some speculation by the Mercedes that was an attempt to kind of slow them down or reel them in because of this party mode that they have that really gives them an advantage, especially in qualifying. And both Toto Wolff and Lewis Hamilton were quite dismissive of that it might actually work to their advantage rather than disadvantage. So anyways, let's just take a quick look now. The Spa-Francorchamps, obviously it is been at the home of the Belgian Grand Prix for a good many years. It is 7 kilometers, just a hair over, 7.004 kilometers long, or 4.532 miles, 44 laps, which gives us a 308.05 kilometer race distance, or 191.41 miles. Last year we had an attendance of 251,000 fans, just shy of 252,000. Pole position was Charles Leclerc. Fastest lap was his teammate Sebastian Vettel, who set a fastest lap of a 146.409. Compare that to Charles' pole lap of 142.519. And we had a podium of Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton, and Valtteri Bottas. And, well, it's unlikely that we will see Charles winning the race this weekend. But, you never know because it could be a bit of a wet race. I'm just looking now at the temperatures and the forecast. Saturday at about it's looking like about mid-afternoon, it's looking to be about 17 degrees or 62 Fahrenheit, sunny and cloudy, so not bad. But if you look at the race on Sunday, it looks like it might be a bit of a wet race. It could be a wet race. They're talking about 60% chance of precipitation, fairly low temperature, 14 degrees Celsius or 58 degrees Fahrenheit. And wouldn't that be nice to have a wet race and see if that kind of throws a bit of a twist into it, and see some of these guys that are good wet weather drivers, and see if we can get a little bit of unpredictability in there. Anyways, it's one of my favorite races, of the year. Really looking forward to it. And just before I go, let's just quickly run down the top five drivers in the Drivers' Championship. Of course, Lewis Hamilton still leading the way with after six races, 132 points. Max Verstappen second with 95. Valtteri Bottas 6 points adrift with 89. Then you have Charles Leclerc and Lance Stroll from Racing Point rounding out the top five. And then on the constructor side, you have, I leave my notes? Here we go. On the driver's side, we have Mercedes, Red Bull, Racing Point, McLaren, and then Ferrari rounding out the top five in the constructors. But just look at the big gap. Ferrari, 61 points combined from Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel through the first six races of the year. Compare that to Mercedes at the top of the constructors, 221 points. Absolutely mind-blowing. And it's very much a very, very different story for both of those teams. But that's it. That's all the time I got for tonight. Thank you so very much for downloading, listening to the show. Thank you for hanging in there and coming back again. And that's a wrap for episode 192 for those of you who have been counting. That kind of blew my mind when I looked at it this week. I keep a count each and every week, but kind of really sank in that we've almost hit 200 episodes since 2016. And we've pretty much been here week in, week out, except for the time that we take off over the Christmas and holiday period at the end of the year. And well, I mean, Formula One is it, right, guys? It's what we love, what we like to talk about, and what we what we look forward to on Sunday afternoon. So, having said that, enjoy the Belgian Grand Prix on Sunday. Planning to come back and do a race report on Sunday evening, so look out for that. Enjoy the race, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.